Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for The Other Podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hello, folks. John Hogue here, the other guy on The Other Podcast, sitting across the dining room table from Stacy at the undisclosed location, where Stacy writes his blog called The Other McCain. He's not taking his cue, though, so I'll just go ahead.
You can find my good friend John Hogue's work at his site, Hoguewash.com.
Or if you need advice and encouragement running your not-for-profit, talk to Diana. How's it going in Valdosta?
Well, it is raining. Boy, howdy, is it raining.
Well, you're on the edge of the storm there, aren't you?
We are.
Yeah, it's supposed to be up here in a day or so.
Yeah.
What's that?
Feeder bands. We've got feeder bands coming on through.
Okay, man.
So yeah, you'll just enjoy that. Well, let's hope that the government weather forecasters are doing a better job of keeping us advised about that than some of the other parts of the government are keeping us advised about other dangerous situations. I think the first topic heading we have here on the sheet is failure 2.0. I'd like to start it off with just referring to a tweet that I saw from the Daily Express about Piers Morgan ranting about how the Afghanistan fiasco is going to destroy the presidency of our nice president.
How so could it?
Well, yes. But, you know, it's interesting. He was saying it as if it were a bad thing.
Well, you know, by the way, it's Saturday, and I know it's only August, but they're playing college football. I'm just going to hijack the show here to tell you that Illinois defeated Nebraska 30-22 today. Mm-hmm. So we're already getting started on football, but it will get fully underway next weekend, and you know how I am about that. But speaking of programs that we like to watch, that 70s show is coming back for a sequel. That 70s show 2.0 is apparently going to debut because. You know, the thing is that as bad as it is right now, just wait until the Taliban starts officially taking hostages in Kabul. Biden administration is desperately trying to spin its bug out in Afghanistan as a success. Jim Treacher headlined an article this week called "Biden Sank the Ship and Now He's Bragging About the Number of Lifeboats." So what they're trying to say is that the number of people evacuated is being cited as success by the Biden administration, and never mind.
That's like counting the VC's body count against us is success in Nam.
Yeah. And so what I see, you know, over the horizon, once our official military presence has ended there, is a repeat of the 1979 Iran hostage crisis.
Oh, yeah, but that was
boat people with a side of boat people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's wholesale. This is going to be retail and vast quantities too.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is that what I'm hearing, and you know, we have unreliable information. It's very difficult to tell exactly how many Americans are over there, still over there, but as many as 1,000, maybe even more. But I'm hearing that roughly 1,000 people are essentially stranded in Afghanistan right now. And there was a lot of back and forth in the press conference Thursday and Friday about the question of whether there are people over there who actually want to stay there or whether, whether we're talking about people who just can't get to the airport, because with the bombing at the airport on Thursday, which we'll get to, of course,
well, not only that, but your name might be on a list.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. My God.
The Lord High Executioner has his little list, and now the Taliban has their longer one.
Yeah, yes. Well, the problem is that at least the Lord High Executioner didn't, like, televise the torture and murder of the hostage of the little list.
Well, yes, the good thing about his list, though, was he had to do it in order, and he was at the top of the list to be beheaded.
Yep.
Well, you can imagine what it's going to be like when the Taliban starts posting live stream videos of American hostages being beheaded in Kabul. Because
how about the gang rape of the women?
Well, I don't know if they'll televise that, but
why not? They're low lives.
Well, I mean, they can't. It's going to be ugly. I'm pretty sure whatever happens over there, and the Biden administration is trying desperately to shift the blame by claiming that, well, this is really Trump's fault. But, oh, we'll get to that later as well. Let me put it to you this way. I was thinking of a polling question this week. But I don't think the word clusterfuck would be proper to use. But it would be, and the thing is, and if you've watched the polling numbers, even many Democrats are realizing how bad the Biden administration has botched.
Someplace north of 50%. Of the public do not trust the government to be telling us the truth about what's going on in this situation.
Yeah.
Look, the whole next few years are going to be screwed up.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. They trust the government less than they trust the media. You know how low the trust in the media is.
Yeah, it's somewhat lower than used car salesmen now.
Yep.
But the next few years are going to be ugly. They're going to be difficult because, look, think about it like this. The catastrophes of the Buchanan and Carter administrations occurred toward the end of their terms.
Right.
Right. We haven't had that happen this time. We're going to have it, you know, basically it started at time t equals zero for this bunch.
Oh, yeah. It's
the people on Twitter and other places are saying that various people should resign, that Biden should resign.
Yes.
Yeah, he should resign. A Congress critter by the name of Tom Rice has tweeted, "President Biden, you yourself said the buck stops here. Do the American people a favor. Resign and turn the job over to someone who can handle it. Well, he could resign, but he doesn't have the opportunity to turn it over to anyone who can handle it.
The least popular vice president since Spiro Agnew. Okay,
I'm not even sure that he wouldn't that she's doing better.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she couldn't even win a primary. She didn't even make it all the way to Iowa.
Look, she couldn't
give a speech saying the nattering nabobs of negativity. Okay, that's how poorly. I mean, it wasn't that great a speech, but nattering nabobs of negativity is a pretty good.
Yeah, and Pat Buchanan, who was a speechwriter, wrote that trying to trip him up, and he handled it anyway. But you know, here's the thing. Agnew was enough of a presence in the American mind that the late night comics could make jokes about him. Right.
Yeah.
And people would go, Agnew. Whereas, Harris, who there was a great joke. What kind of watch does Mickey Mouse wear? A Spiro Agnew watch? Well, I mean, you know, you don't hear jokes like that about the current VP.
Well, yeah, nobody dare anyway. They'd be afraid of being called a sexist, a racist, and God knows what else.
Well, okay. But there are plenty of other women that they find time to attack.
They're Republicans.
Well, I mean, like, poor Christina Peshaw has just been amazingly... she's been amazingly...
slammed?
Her personal behavior through all this has just been admirable. I can't imagine... if Harris really had to put up with something like this, what she would look like.
Well, she would cackle a lot, I'm sure. Yeah. But, as a qualification for high public office, an ability to cackle at every bit of news is not.
Yeah, right.
While we're talking about, speaking of cackling, however, cackling in glee.
Yes.
We have a story. I had a post this week called "The Woman Who Killed Never Trump."
Emerald Robinson. Yes.
Yes. Emerald Robinson, if you don't know, was the chief White House correspondent for One America News Network, OAN. But she's now with Newsmax. And in 2018, she wrote an article in the American Spectator headlined "The Collapse of the Never Trump Conservatives." And this was a rundown of what had gone wrong for the gang that couldn't shoot straight, Bill Kristol and company, Stephen Hayes, the whole Weekly Standard crowd. Well,
the Ahoy Bunch.
The Ahoy Bunch, yes.
Kurt
Schlichter.
Love it.
Yes. Oh, my God. Named them the started made Ahoy as the as the thing because I don't know who's tuning in and how much you understand that reference, but the thing was that back in the day, the Weekly Standard had an annual cruise, and this was a big perk to their subscribers.
Well, subscribers who would drop $5K or $10K to pay for
the bring them. Right. It was basically a bunch of old rich people who would pay to hang out with Bill Kristol on a boat for a week or whatever. Well, anyways. And so when they started going in on this Never Trump thing, Kurt Schlichter started putting up a little emoticon of a cruise ship and saying, "Ahoy!" So you got to – anyways, but the sequel of this 2018 article is that it apparently got Stephen Hayes booted off of Fox News. And shortly thereafter, the owners of the Weekly Standard began asking themselves, what exactly is the purpose of this money-losing publication? And I go on to talk about everything that happened. But Ace of Spades had a post about a certain Weekly Standard staffer named Jim Swift. Mm-hmm. And this was a weird little thing that was going on in 2018, where Jim Swift of the Weekly Standard was trying to get Selena Zito fired from the Washington Examiner. Now, if you know who Selena Zito is.
I mean, yes. You don't fire your stars when they're bringing in readership.
No.
Right.
Don't.
And the Washington Examiner was owned by the same company that owned the Weekly Standard. Mm-hmm. And so what kind of harebrained operation is this, where one branch of the company is attacking the other? And so, but now Jim Swift is gone because, you know, the Weekly Standard, but he's now over at, I think he's at the Bulwark now, or the Dispatch, or whatever the hell newsletter that they're doing. And I speak of Jim Swift as a high risk candidate for type 2 diabetes. But, you know, I it's wrong to make fun of fat people. But if I don't like you and you're fat, I'm going to call attention to the fat.
When you see it's just a matter of style. I would have made an allusion to Michelin tires.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just picture the form
Michelin
of the
man.
Destructor. Yes.
Oh, God, the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. I love it.
Yes. Well, you know, he could stand to lose a few hundred pounds. So, anyways, but.
But so, you look, in this case, you've got Mrs. Robinson, who's doing excellent reporting and insightful analysis. On the other hand.
Oh,
there, boy. There are other outlets that aren't doing so well. For example, the Washington Post. Jennifer Pro-Voting Rubin tweeted, since we've brought out 42,000 people, overwhelming Afghans, maybe the line about abandoning our friends needs some refinement, she tweeted earlier this week. To which Paul Krugman of the New York Times replied, at the very least, we're seeing an impressive display of sheer competence.
No. Austin Scott this afternoon was pointing out that of those 100,000 people airlifted out, 15,000 are SIVs and American citizens. The other 85,000, we don't know.
Right.
And they're not telling us.
Yes, but I did it. I'm one of my I'm not making this up, you know, posts. And I just tagged it with Lawrence J. Peter was unavailable for comment.
Okay. Do you know who I had to look this up? Who Lawrence J. Peter is?
Yes, he's the author of The Peter Principle, which states that in a hierarchy, given enough time and enough ranks in the hierarchy, a person rises to his level of incompetence. In other words, they keep promoting you until you screw up, and then in a big bureaucracy, they won't get rid of you, so you'll just stay there making things bad.
The lateral promotion, yes.
Yeah, work is not yet work. All work in the organization is accomplished by those employees who have not yet reached their level of incompetence.
Right. But it's interesting, though, there is a corollary to the Peter Principle that Dr. Peter points out that says that it is also harmful to the organization to have too many people below their level of competence.
Mm.
Right.
Okay.
Because they will turn. Well, first of all, they're not as productive as they should be. And then they will turn into troublemakers.
We've seen E6s.
Well, no, actually, in this case, a board 05, not a board 05, a pissed off 05. We'll get to that in a little bit. But meanwhile, speaking of Marines, are they Nazis?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, there was a post this week that really got a lot of people's attention over at Vice. If you, by the way, Vice has just had another round of layoffs. So I don't know if the guy who wrote this particular story is still employed, but
so they're tightening the Vice. Okay.
Yeah. The website vice.com had a story, with the headline, "Why Are So Many Marines Neo-Nazis?" And it happened to run, coincidence, on the same day that terrorists killed 12 Marines in Kabul. Yeah. So as you can imagine, the people on the internet was stuffing this down their throat, and they actually ended up deleting their tweet promoting it. But people are very angry. My distant cousin, Megan McCain, replied to this saying, "Go fuck yourselves." I mean, okay. That was her response. Very ladylike there. But it turns out that the article is written by this guy who writes constantly about neo-Nazis. Let me run down a list of recent headlines from the writer Ben McCooch, as I guess I'm pronouncing it correctly. "Neo-Nazi leader gets prison for disturbing threats against journalists. Infamous Capitol Hill attacker was allegedly posting inside neo-Nazi chat room. Unmasking dark foreigner, the artist who fueled a neo-Nazi terror movement. Ex-Marine and neo-Nazi told followers how to shoot truckers to dismantle supply chain. Ex-Canadian soldier linked to neo-Nazi terror plot pleads guilty in U.S. Mass shooting plotter is allegedly sending prison letters to influential neo-Nazi and is calling for violence. Neo-Nazi group The Base is recruiting again despite FBI takedown." So you see the phrase neo-Nazi being repeated here. Well,
oh yeah.
Let me ask you something.
Well known, yeah, right.
Yeah. So let me ask you something. Are your chances of being killed by a neo-Nazi greater than being hit by a bolt of lightning?
As I pointed out, be careful because Thor and Zeus are both old white guys.
Yeah. According to the National Weather Service, lightning kills an average of 49 people each year in the United States, and hundreds more are injured. So if the neo-Nazis aren't killing 50 people a year, you're more likely to be killed by a lightning strike. But the relative rarity of murders committed by neo-Nazis is irrelevant to Ben McCooch's purpose in publicizing the activities of such people, namely politics. It's all a guilt by association smear against right-wingers in general. Now, I assume that my good friend John Hogue, a peaceful, law-abiding citizen, is nevertheless would consider himself fairly right-wing. He's very conservative. And the difference between someone being merely right-wing, okay, in that you're conservative, you support old-fashioned things like fiscal prudence.
And, yes, but I'm not so far to the right that I support the monarchy.
Well, anyways, okay. So, but the point being that you can have fairly, you can have very conservative political views and not be a threat to anyone.
Have very liberal alleged political views and still be extremely conservative about your personal affairs.
Right. Yes. But the point being that just because someone is right wing doesn't mean they're dangerous. I'm trying to get this. And when you're talking about, extremists, violent extremists, well, they've got to commit some actual violence. How much violence do neo-Nazis actually commit? Well, thankfully, there was an FBI report a joint report by the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security in May of this year, which reported that 2019 was, quote, the most lethal year, close quote, for domestic violent extremist attacks since 1995. Now, hang on a second. 1995. Oh, that was the year of the Oklahoma City bombing, right? Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, that's 160 plus dead all in one whack.
Right, right, right. He said, but in 2019, again, according to the DHS and FBI, there were 32 people killed in domestic violent extremist attacks. 24 of them were killed by white supremacists. Okay, pause that for a minute. 24. Hang on. Mm-hmm. But wait a minute. What happened in 2019? Oh, it was the attack on the Walmart in El Paso. Do you remember a 21-year-old guy named Crucius? Do you remember that? 21-year-old guy killed 23 people in the attack on the El Paso Walmart. Oh, wait. There were 24 people killed by white supremacists, 23 of them by one guy. Okay? But the point is that if 49 people are killed by lightning in an average year, still, in 2019, only half as many were killed by white supremacists. Okay, the point being that you're more likely to die in a lightning strike than in a white supremacist attack.
I'm more likely to die in a traffic accident than a white supremacist
attack. A drug overdose. There are something like 90-something thousand drug overdoses, 93,000 drug overdoses.
I don't know that they're all fatal, but yes, you know, there are all sorts of medical accidents, other things. Look, the problem is that there's lawlessness abroad in the land, and some of it is being done.
Well, let's don't talk about Chicago.
Well, some of it is being done by crazies on the left. And some of it's being done by crazies on the right.
But most
of it is being done just by bad guys that don't have any politics one way or the other.
Well, I think they're mostly Democrats, but that's just me.
No, I don't think they vote. But anyway, speaking of lawlessness.
Oh.
The Supreme Court handed down a couple of interesting decisions this week. On Tuesday, they had an order in a pending case called Biden versus Texas. And in that case, they basically ruled that the government and Department of Homeland Security broke the law by implementing Biden's instructions to suspend the stay in Mexico thing. So, the case is still pending, but the stay was issued. The government
has been vacated.
Yeah, and so it is. You know, there is going to be. Basically, either he has to act like Andrew Jackson and say the court has made its ruling, now it can enforce it, which would just be more lawlessness, or he's going to have to stop obeying the law. So, you know, what can I tell you? And then there was the small matter of the case that came up with the eviction ban. Yeah. And basically, if you read that order from the court, basically, it says, look, we told you that Congress has to attend to this. And until Congress has to attend to it, game over. So, you know, it's they're not having a good time with that.
No.
No. On the other hand, we've been having a good time so far this evening. At least I have. And I enjoy doing these podcasts. But it's even more enjoyable when somebody finds the yellow button and help support us.
Ah, yes, folks. If you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice in the near the top of the center column a yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute to support the blog and the podcast, but mainly to keep my wife happy, because keeping my wife happy is job number one. So the shameless capitalism, if you click the yellow button, that's how we generate income for the blog. Meanwhile, over at my good friend John Hoag's site, hoagwash.com.
Look, I'm going to be honest with you. I've got a day job that would support Hoagwash as my hobby, but I appreciate the support that I get from the readers who like the blog. And so I have a tip jar over there on the sidebar. Click on it, be taken to my PayPal account, or you can use the links to the link to shop at the Hoagwash store, buy all sorts of nifty keen stuff branded related to the blog, or you can use the Amazon shopping links. Both our blogs participate in the Amazon affiliate program, and when you shop using a blogger's link like that, the blog gets a little bit of commission, which is a good thing that Amazon does. We appreciate that. So regardless of how you want to support us, please remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Yes, please.
Thank you very much.
Meanwhile, back
yes,
in...
Yes, I intoned that well tonight. Back to yes. the blog.
Meanwhile, back in what is an approximation of the real world these days, White House press flack Jen Psaki has admitted that it's likely that there will be American citizens still stranded in Afghanistan after they pull the plug on the evacuation.
It's their own fault.
Yeah, well, there were only 52 American hostages in Tehran in 79-80. You know, this thing about Carter's second term being the best case scenario is really kind of falling apart these days. Mm-hmm. It just isn't working. Meanwhile, Stacey, you had a post that has that wonderful picture of Biden with his back turned.
Yes. And this was on Thursday. Okay. If you remember what happened I'm sorry. Hang on a second. I'm trying to remember.
No, there were others. The 24th.
This was actually on Tuesday, yep. I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm getting my days confused here.
Well, it's all kind
it
of.
It may be that I'm so old, I'm getting senile.
take an umber.
Okay. Well, anyways, but no, our alleged president, it was announced, would give a press conference Tuesday at noon. But noon came and went, and then they said 2:30, which also came and went. Finally, about 5 o'clock, Biden comes out and reads a 15-minute scripted statement before turning his back and walking out while Peter Doocy of Fox shouted, quote, "Do you guarantee every American will be out before the troops leave?" Close quote. And there was no response.
No.
He began, and this was Tuesday, okay, when you know, after the thing had been going sideways in Kabul for days.
But it hadn't quite blown up in his face yet.
Yeah, not quite yet. That's a choice of words you'll regret. But anyways, but he started out by talking about his Build Back Better agenda and infrastructure and stuff like that, as if business as usual on Capitol Hill is what really matters and not the thousands of Americans currently trapped in Afghanistan. And this is all about just, you know, success. Biden is simply not being Trump. Okay, that's what the people voted for. They voted, allegedly. They voted for not Trump. And so as long as he is not Trump, he's winning.
And we haven't had any of those mean tweets.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Well, so anyway, so you think he had a bad speech on Tuesday?
Yeah.
Well, on Wednesday, he had a press briefing. And Peter Alexander of NBC News asked him what he would do if Americans are still in Afghanistan after the deadline. And Biden's response was to smirk. And then whoever was thinking clearly turned off his microphone.
But
Alexander, of course, being in the room with him, heard him what he said and reported it. The Biden's response was, "You'll be the first person I call," and yeah. Then he took no questions.
Yes,
you
yes.
know, and
yeah, right. Wait a minute. I thought Trump was the one who was the enemy of the free First Amendment and everything. I thought Trump really? Was the media hater.
Ah. Well, yeah, okay. Well, that's what you get for thinking, Kimasabi.
Yeah,
it doesn't work
we're
like
all
that.
Supposed to, we're all supposed to just sit and nod along no matter what we're told, I guess.
Well,
not
yeah.
something I do.
Well, that was Wednesday, and then Thursday happened.
Yeah, Thursday happened.
Kaboom.
That's a trouble with things being on the other side of the world. As Kabul is from the United States, but the what was Thursday morning our time, but was actually Thursday evening Kabul time, there was a bombing at the airport, and apparently the other branch of the Taliban, you know, there's the Taliban that is we're negotiating it with, and then there's the Taliban that's blowing up our guys. They're all Taliban over there. But anyways, there was a bombing at the airport. It subsequently found out that 13 U.S. service members were killed, 12 Marines and a Navy corpsman. And over 100 were injured, including several U.S. military personnel. And it was a suicide bombing.
Of course.
And then Biden came out and gave a speech in which he actually did take questions, including one from he said he was instructed to take questions.
Mm-hmm.
But his basic response was to say that this was all somehow Trump's fault.
Yeah, right. Right. Sure.
You watched the speech.
Yeah, I did. And it was one of those things where all I could do in terms of giving it an honest review was saying his lips were moving. Mm-hmm. Then I also added that it's also clear that Biden and whoever drafted that speech for him have no familiarity with the sixth chapter of Isaiah and its context. Otherwise, he would not have used that passage from Isaiah, "Here am I, send me." It just talk about not understanding and not having it fit. Ugh.
Yeah.
And I guess part of the problem now, though, is that there's just not enough people who are familiar with Isaiah to call him on it.
But. Yeah. Well, anyways, the image that came out of that press conference was of Biden leaning on the podium, leaning on his briefing book with his head down, his hands
yeah, right.
folded, like some kind of victim. That's the image I used on my blog, again, theothermccain.com, for a post yesterday headlined, "Biden's Bagram Bagram Bungalow, you know, Bagram Air Base, about 25 miles outside of Kabul, was our base of operations in Afghanistan for so long that it's incomprehensible that we gave that up.
I know.
Before we had evacuated everybody from Afghanistan.
Well, no, here's the other thing. We had turned the Afghan army into a force modeled on ours. Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you think that we supplied our people by trucks along roads in rural areas where people could snipe at them or where there would be IEDs? No, our guys were supplied by helicopter. Well, guess where the helicopters that supplied our guys and the Afghans were based?
Bagram.
Ah, yes. We have somebody who's been paying attention on yes. line there. Bagram. And so it's, you know, when we, it's not that we left. We took the maintenance people who kept them running with us, and we hadn't trained local crews to do maintenance. That had been done by outside contractors, mostly Americans and Europeans, mostly American businesses. So you cut off all of the food and ammunition to the Afghan army and wonder why they surrendered.
Yeah. Now, I've got a long excerpt on my page from the Daily Mail talking about the decision-making that went into the abandonment of Bagram Air Base and who is to blame for that. But ultimately, the problem was this, is that they were... When Biden became president, there were about 2,500 American troops still in Afghanistan. And he wanted, for some reason, and I don't know how this number was arrived at, they wanted to get the number down to about 600 or 700. Okay. And they also wanted to hold on to the embassy in Kabul.
Well, 600 or 700 guys is a battalion of soldiers or a battalion of Marines. So it's one unit.
Well, the problem is that would include all the support personnel, the logistics people, the quartermasters, all like that.
Right. Well, you'd have the support company from an infantry battalion.
Right. And so trying to get down to 700 troops, and they looked at what they had and they said, well, we can't hold Bagram and protect the embassy this way. That's so what sick. They did was they switched their air. Hang on. The dogs have begun barking. John, if you talk for a minute, you and Diane.
Yes.
See if I find out what's going on here.
No, it's just having more. They're just having more fun than should be legal.
They're dogs. Dogs are like that. Yes, Marley, we understand. I didn't understand that. The more I was reading of that excerpt, the more my hair was not standing on end, but it was trying. What were they thinking? I don't quite get the planning. Okay, that isn't planning. That's just they're just trying for some weird optics thing.
Right, but Simi,
it doesn't work.
Well, look, one of the things that I was taught in Army ROTC was an incredibly important principle that amateurs study tactics. Mm-hmm. And professional study logistics.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it was a stupid logistical decision made in support of a non-professional idea of what the tactic should be.
Yep.
Well, the people who were trying to defend the Biden administration are claiming that the that however we got out of Afghanistan, it was going to be messy. But the problem is of what actually happened, okay? What actually happened as opposed to some moot possibility of what would have happened in some alternative scenario, okay? There's a way to do this right. And what happened was this. Biden has been trying to say, well, he inherited a situation. Right. OK, that the Doha agreement signed in February 2020, where the agreement with the Taliban, right, is mm-hmm. supposedly the controlling factor. But Biden did not keep the agreement.
Yeah, otherwise we'd have been gone by Memorial Day.
Right. We were supposed to be out under the Doha agreement that we would pull out all of our forces by May 1st. And what happened instead was that he comes in and then in April, because if you think about May 1st, that's basically 100 days after the inauguration. Okay. So in mid-April, Biden comes out and says, well, we're not doing that. What we're going to do, though, however, is to get all troops out by September 11th, okay? The 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. And so it is obvious to any, it's 2 + 2 here, that what he had in mind was to give a victorious, a speech from the White House claiming, look at the success, we pulled out, blah, 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 with the idea that the Kabul government would at least be able to, hold on to Kabul long enough for him to give that speech. But instead, even before, he then subsequently said, we're going to take all the troops out by August 31st, mm-hmm. right? Well, long before that happened, the countryside had been completely taken over by the Taliban, so that this political choice, this political symbolism of September 11th did not work out. It was a bad choice.
Well,
plans met reality? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Who was it that said that no battle plan ever survives its first encounter with reality?
Or the enemy.
That Clausewitz, Clausewitz.
Oh, but that's one of those things you see repeated in books about tactics.
Very, very old.
Yes. As a matter of fact, you can essentially find the same thing, but in different words, it's Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
And actually probably in Xenophon as well. I'm not sure which one is actually older.
Anyway, so now we're left to imagine what is going to be happening on September 11th, right, this year. It's not going to be nice, I don't think.
No.
But I think that there'll probably be an interesting 20th anniversary celebration in certain quarters.
Ooh.
But, what do I know, really? I'm just here on the sidelines.
You're just a drummer in a rock and roll band.
No, I've never been a drummer in the band. I played wind instruments. The closest thing to a drummer is there is one album out there where at the end of it, I'm actually playing wind chimes. So I guess that counts as percussion, but not a drummer. Yeah. I will tell you the folks the music joke, and I will remind them of what I actually do in music these days at the end. What do you do with a musician who can't quite get the tune right? You give him two sticks and send him to the back. And what do you do with him when he can't keep the beat steady? You take one of the sticks away and put him out front. I work
that's
now.
So old. I haven't heard that in years, but that's a great one.
But I work as a conductor.
Well, anyways, this week we lost one of the immortals.
One of the guys that I really wished I'd have been able to work with, but for some reason the band he was in never really decided to cut much in Nashville.
Yeah. No. Yeah, they went to Memphis.
Muscle Shoals.
Muscle Shoals. I believe they also recorded Memphis.
Well, they may have, but
they recorded Muscle Shoals, but not in Nashville. But anyways, Charlie Watts, drummer for the Rolling Stones, died this week, and
best dressed man in rock and roll.
I have also been told that he was one of the most reliably professional musicians that almost everybody I've ever talked with has said that they've worked with, and that he was one of the nicest people they ever met.
Yeah, and the thing about Charlie Watts, and you've got to remember this, is that he started out, he was always a jazz aficionado.
Well, even when he was in the Stones, he had his own jazz band, had his own combo that played when it wasn't with the Stones on the road. Mm-hmm.
Well, anyways, but he was a jazz musician who got into a blues nightclub, Alex Corner Blues Incorporated. There was a nightclub band. And then the Rolling Stones started, the proto-Rolling Stones of Mick Jagger, Brian Jones, Keith Richards were hanging around. And it took him a while to convince Charlie Watts to join them because he was getting a steady paycheck in the job he had, and they couldn't offer him that. But
this is back when they're still a band playing clubs. I mean, it's even before they got their first gig as the opening act for Ike and Tina Turner.
Right. Charlie Watts was not a flashy player. He just kept the beat very well. And the closest thing I can think of to a drum part where you really notice is Street Fighting Man.
Actually, if you take the drum track out of any Stones tune, it won't be a Stones tune anymore. If you listen like to Satisfaction, he's coming down with the bass drum just slightly ahead of the beat. Snare is hitting it just after the beat, and yet they're perfectly aligned, even though they're not in sync.
Another great drum part by Charlie Watts, now that I think about it, is Honky Tonk Women.
I was wondering if you were going to go there. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it starts with that cowbell, you know.
Yes.
And then it comes in the boom, tap, boom, tap, boom, tap.
And he didn't need more cowbell.
What? Yeah, and it has a tremendous feel to it. No, it didn't need more cowbell, but it just had such a tremendous feel to it, and it's very simple though.
But you know, the best players, especially the best session players I've ever worked with, are great because of the notes they didn't play.
Right. They keep it simple, stupid.
They stay out of the other guy's way when it's the other guy's turn.
Right.
And Watts was particularly good with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I compared them. I compared him to John Bonham of Led Zeppelin. Now, which is a completely different thing because John Bonham was always playing these really astonishing syncopated parts. Okay, that you notice John Bonham's play. Okay, and John Bonham, of course, a real wild man who died when he was, I think, 32. Of alcohol, overdose, really. But the vast difference between them in terms of their style, and I pointed out that if you're looking, you look at them, and Charlie Watts played the traditional grip with the left stick held underhand, whereas John Bonham played with match grip, both hands overhand, both sticks held overhand. And I had never realized this before, but a commenter on the blog pointed it out. The reason the traditional grip has them playing underhand on the left stick is because this was how in marching army drummers, right, mm-hmm. carried the drum slung over their right hip, and your arm couldn't reach that way holding it overhand, so that the mm-hmm. so that the holding it the left hand underhanded was mm-hmm. came from military drummers. Okay, and that's where that came from. I never knew that before, but you learn things out there.
Yeah, well, and the match thing is used more for things like the timpani.
Mm. Right, right, right.
Or the bass drum.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so I learned, you know, things you can learn from blogging out there.
Right, but, you know, you'd be surprised how many drummers you know, have been in the high school marching band.
Oh yeah. That was when I, but see, this is the thing is that when I was, you know, playing in rock and roll bands and playing, and I also played, of course, I played trombone in high school band. But the thing is that, you know, when I was in high school marching band, the drummers were just outright hoodlums, okay? Now, the lower brass section, I mean, the lower brass, especially those trombones, we had a few juvenile delinquents over there, but the real criminals were in the drum section.
Well, you know, the only time I was in an actual band that marched was when I signed up for ROTC, and I was, you know, getting my uniforms issued and that sort of stuff. And I went to the arms room to sign up to have an M1 that I would get to clean every week. And they told me if I joined the band, they'd issue me an instrument instead, and I wouldn't have to clean a rifle. So I spent 4 years in the band, wound up as the drum major my junior year and the band master my senior year. So.
Well, anyways, but you're right. Rock and roll band, and the thing about rock and roll drummers is that they are always the crazy. You know, that's the thing
they're
about Charlie Watts. He was saying, but the drummers in rock and roll bands were just completely crazy.
Well, I mean, here's the interesting thing about, you know, when you're doing an act like the Stones, for instance, there's a, not only is there a big stack of Marshalls and other amps there for the guitar and bass player, but there's a big sound system. And so it doesn't matter how loud the drummer plays, you usually have to mic the drums as well. Mm-hmm. The problem with the drummers in most rock and roll bands is they never can play as soft as somebody like Charlie Watts would sometime play.
Hmm. Yep.
And one of the problems why so many what we used to call the Hollywood Inn, Holiday Inn circuit bands, you know, the problem they had was their drummers played too loud. Mm-hmm. And so consequently, the rest of their system was cranked up past distortion. Yep. But meanwhile,
speaking of crazy people.
Yes, the drummers are usually the craziest. We have our crazy person who is dangerous today, and I mean actually physically dangerous, claiming she's going to shoot you.
Yeah.
There has been a staff sergeant by the name of Bronson who has posted a TikTok thing basically threatening to shoot American citizens if martial law is declared.
Yeah, right. If you don't obey me, she says.
Yeah.
I could not believe that.
Yeah, Bronson is her name.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, and I'm...
And the thing is, you know, we've had that Marine Lieutenant Colonel get fired, which actually, under the way the Uniform Code of Military Justice is set up, he should have been relieved of his job. It's one. It's
mm-hmm. Yes.
Criticism is okay, but
taking it outside, no.
Well, no. Even taking it outside is okay in certain instances, but basically disrespectful speech, and his got over the edge in a couple of ways where I can understand if I had been his commanding general, I would have relieved him as well. Mm. But this sergeant, there is in the Uniform Code of Military Justice, Article 115, is called communicating threats. In Section A of that, any person subject to this chapter who wrongfully communicates a threat to injure the person, property, or reputation of another shall be punished as court-martials shall direct. So we're talking about what this woman did is a court-martial offense. And if I were her company commander, she'd be in front of my desk at O'Dark 30 Monday morning, and I would be reading her rights under Article 31, which start off with the right to remain silent.
Well, I don't know. You know, you would certainly be cleaning latrines for a long time.
Well,
if you were not disciplined under the Universal Code of Military Justice, you would be punished in some way.
Well, there are things that could, there are things that her company or battalion commander can do in terms of non-judicial punishment, and they could do that under Article 134, which is conduct that brings discredit on the service. And that would be a separate charge from 115, which would be a court-martial offense.
Well, John, my son, one of my sons, I have four sons, I have one who is in the Army. He has actually been to Afghanistan. He's stateside now. But he has no opinions, okay? I'm telling you, you're never going to hear him express an opinion about politics. He has served under President Obama. He served under President Trump. He's serving under President Biden. He serves, okay? He does not speak out. And
I served under Johnson, Nixon, Ford, and Carter.
Yeah. And so staying out of politics is something that anyone would be well advised to do in the military. But I hear the sound of the boogie woogie in the background, which tells me
it's time to go.
Yes, and we will be back again, 7 o'clock next Saturday.
Yep, we'll see you then.
As usual, always, for the other podcast, Diana.
Yes.
And we'll see you later.
Good night, Diana.
Good night.
Good night, Stacy.